Williams. That's Sunday, June 15th at 11 p.m. right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web.
This is Phil Donahue. And you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5.
Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott, on WBAI New York 99.5 FM. Today, Cuba and Africa. From the Congo to Namibia to Angola to ending apartheid in South Africa. The little-known story of Cuba's role in ending colonialism in Africa. Why are these facts hidden from us? Cuba, an African odyssey.
July 1991 in Havana. It is Nelson Mandela's first trip outside Africa since his release from 27 years of prison. But why would the legend of struggle against oppression decide that the first person he wants to thank for helping to end apartheid is Fidel Castro, the very man who is regarded in the West as an oppressor of his own people? Fidel Castro and 500,000 Cubans took part in the African wars, which ultimately ended colonialism. This little-known story began in 1960, only a year after Cuban revolutionaries triumphed. Their struggle had captured people's imagination, and the young feisty leaders, Fidel Castro and Che Guevara, emerged from 3 years of guerrilla war as heroes. The wave of independence in Africa was spreading like wildfire. That year alone, 17 African countries gained independence, and 30 others started their revolutionary armed struggle. African revolutionaries were looking to the Cubans as a model for their own independence. Cuba was living proof that David could beat Goliath. Che Guevara was revolted, and his speech gave a clear signal that Cuba intended to act. The case of Patrice Lumumba in the Congo was symbolic of how African independence would be crushed by Cold War strategic interests. It was Lumumba's assassination that sparked a new era for many African revolutionaries, and with it started the epic of Cuba in Africa.
It is estimated that 10,000 Cubans died supporting African liberation movements. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics, Cuba, an African odyssey, from Che Guevara's military campaign to avenge the assassination of Patrice Lumumba in the Congo, up to the fall of apartheid in South Africa. 500,000 Cubans fought alongside African revolutionaries. In the film, Cuba, an African odyssey, the previous untold story of Cuba's support for African revolutionaries in one of the Cold War's most vigorous contests over resources as well as technology. The filmmaker is Jihan El Tari. And for those of you who call and pledge your support for WBAI at 212-209-2950, we will send you this film as a thank you gift for those of you who pledge at the $150 level. Now, I'll tell you something about this film. It's very, very hard to get your hands on. I actually tried to purchase one on Amazon.com, and the price point was $496. I had to find the filmmaker where she was in the world. She's not based in the United States to arrange to make this as a thank you gift for you, the WBAI listener. So I can tell you, call us at 212-209-2950. Pledge at the $150 level. We will send this to you and available online for $196 if you could find it at all. What I'd like to do now is to go directly to the clips to give you a sense of all of what is in this film. And in this clip, we start off with the Congo and the independence of Congo and Patrice Lumumba, the young first prime minister of the Congo after independence. He was subsequently assassinated with complicity of the United States, U.S. taxpayers' dollar, the CIA, as well as Belgian authorities. The Congo had been a colony of Belgium. And of course, the Congo is one of the richest countries on the planet in terms of mineral resources. So the fight over the Congo is still ongoing. Let's go to that clip now from Cuba, An African Odyssey.
The Congo, one of the largest and richest countries on the continent. The Belgian colony was demanding immediate independence. Patrice Lumumba, the young articulate clerk, led the movement that negotiated a peaceful solution to end Belgian rule. On June 30th, 1960, King Baudouin arrived in Leopoldville, the capital named after his great uncle, to hand over power. On Independence Day, all the dignitaries assembled in Parliament. King Baudouin was to announce the transfer of power to the new government. Patrice Lumumba had just been elected prime minister. But the euphoria of independence did not last long. That same day, Lumumba lit a fire that spread through the entire continent. Lumumba wanted to govern independently, but there were only 30 university graduates in the Congo. So it was agreed that for the next 5 years, Belgium would continue to run the important departments of the new state, including the army. The soldiers felt excluded from the newly acquired freedom. Within days, they started a mutiny which led to the breakdown of the entire country. Lumumba immediately turned to the U.S. for support. The United States had never been a colonizing power, and their democratic principles seemed to guarantee support for people fighting for independence. Fidel Castro himself had chosen the U.S. as his first stop for support when his revolution triumphed a year earlier. But like Castro, Lumumba's attitude did not go down well with the Americans. The visit was not a success, and it was clear that Washington would not come to his rescue. Just as Lumumba was leaving Washington, Cuba announced the nationalization of U.S. companies, and a trade embargo was immediately imposed on the island. Lumumba, like Castro, soon discovered that the Soviet Union was more than happy to help where the U.S. would not.
We became aware of it almost immediately, and it came from Congolese sources. That immediately alerted the Americans. I became wide-eyed at that. I said, we have a problem here. He tried to play off the West against the East. It's an old game, but it was relatively new at that time in Africa.
The Congo crisis was becoming more than just a local conflict in faraway Africa. The superpowers were taking a particular interest, especially Moscow, that had recently set up a bureau for aiding anti-colonial liberation movements.
The Soviet Union was eager to help, or at least agreed to help, the legally elected Congolese government. It was in the last days of July when a squadron of our Ilyushin 14 transport planes, about 10 left for Leopoldville. By the way, they landed in Athens, and the airport, which was partly NATO base. It became a big noise. The whole noise about the Cold War started when we landed there.
It was the first time that there'd ever been Soviets in that part of Africa, at least, certainly not in the Congo, and very few in the rest of Africa, because the colonial powers were not desirous of having the Soviets there.
We believed, and I think it's true, that it was an attempt to hold Congo as a base, especially as a base of minerals for the United States, for the West. We should not forget that the first atomic bomb was done of those uranium found in Congo.
There are only two countries in the world that supply cobalt at that time, Soviet Union and the Congo. And cobalt is extremely important for jet engines and all sorts of high technology. And we could not get it from the Soviet Union because it was a security commodity. So Congo was our only source.
I suspect that the people in Washington began wondering, where are we going to get our cobalt from if the Soviets manage to control that?
The United States deplores the unilateral action of the Soviet Union in supplying aircraft and other equipment for military purposes to the Congo. The Soviet action, which seems to be motivated entirely by the Soviet Union's political designs in Africa. I must repeat that the United States takes a most serious view of this action by the Soviet Union.
Eisenhower fumed about aggressive Soviet support for his opponents. Soviet military aid for Lumumba arrived in the Congo only 1 month after the first Soviet arms shipment had landed in Cuba.
The number to call is 212-209-2950. We will send you Cuba, an African Odyssey, as your thank you gift for those of you who pledge at the $150 level. I can't tell you what an amazing deal this is, because if you try to purchase this film online, Amazon.com had three copies, and if there were four new copies, there were $496 each. I had to track down the brilliant filmmaker Jihan El Tahari, where she was based in France, to try to make an arrangement to make this available for you. This is a very suppressed story. I've watched this film several times now. I'm going to watch it again and get as many people as I know to watch this film. It's just an amazing story. When one looks at what is happening on the continent of Africa today, Africa very much viewed as, well, just victims. And you forget about the African revolutionaries like Patrice Lumumba. You forget how the United States and former colonial powers worked to underdevelop Africa and to squash the revolutionary movements in Africa that were springing up at the time of independence. And what happened in the Congo is a prime example of that. The number to call is 212-209-2950, a film that's practically impossible to find or just way too expensive, nearly $500 to purchase it on Amazon.com. The pledge level is $150. You get to support WBAI 99.5 FM, and you get that as the thank you gift. Patrice Lumumba was born in what was then the Belgian Congo, which is now the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Patrice Lumumba was the first Prime Minister of the Democratic Republic of Congo and an African nationalist leader. He worked for Congolese independence, and he was known throughout the global South, throughout the continent and throughout the global South, for standing up to colonial powers. When the King of Belgium came to the inauguration of independence, the bringing in of independence in the Congo, Patrice Lumumba was not scheduled to speak, even though he had just been elected prime minister, but he got up and he just talked about all of the atrocities that happened in Congo at the hands of the Belgians, colonial power. For 126 years, the United States and Belgium played key roles in shaping Congo's destiny. The number to call is 212-209-2950. And as far as the U.S., you heard the voice, by the way, in that clip, clip of the CIA station chief. Larry Devlin was a CIA guy. You also heard from the Soviets, the filmmaker, Jihan El-Tahari, you know, did her homework, did a brilliant job with getting files that were formerly secret out of Cuba, really using Freedom of Information and other sources to find out what really happened and the complicity of the United States in it. You heard the CIA station chief as well as the Russian guy who both were talking about the resources under the ground in the Congo. Again, the number to call is 212-209-2950. Now, you heard them mention coltan, and one has to, well, why is coltan so important? You know why? Because coltan is, without coltan, you wouldn't have a laptop. You wouldn't have a cell phone. You wouldn't have a television. Airlines, you wouldn't be able to be flying anywhere, okay? Coltan is the only place in the world the U.S. could, the Congo is the only place in the world the U.S. can get coltan. The other place that has some coltan, but not the amount that Congo has, was Russia. And the United States couldn't get it out of Russia, they say, because of security purposes. So they had to get it out of Congo. Congo, of course, rich in all kinds of natural resources. Uranium needed for the U.S. military also in the Congo. 212-209-2950. We all owe a great debt to the Congo. There's been a genocide going on in the Congo. Up to 6 million people have been killed in proxy wars in the fight to get the multinationals to get their hands on this resources. All of us are complicit in it, really, because I'm carrying a cell phone. You likely are as well. You may have a television. So please, let's get the word out about this true story, Cuba, an African odyssey. The number is 212-209-2950. Pledge at the 150 level. I've got a goal of $3,000 for this hour. So that means, you know, I need a number of you calling and pledging at the $150 level for us to meet our goal. We have a few other thank you gifts. We're offering the classic DVD, Lumumba DVD. That pledge level is $120. And we're also offering Looking for Fidel, Oliver Stone's Conversation with Fidel Castro. That's a DVD. The pledge level is $75. What I'd like to do now is to go on to yet another clip from Congo, Cuba, an African odyssey. And in that clip, you'll hear about the U.S. sending in the CIA and also sending in U.N. troops. Does that sound familiar? And Lumumba is assassinated.
Eisenhower decided to send the CIA into action.
I received a message saying that people were in Washington were highly concerned about the activities of the prime minister and that they hoped that he would go, you know, there would be a change in the government. The next thing I knew, I received a cable saying that someone by the name of Joe would arrive in Leopoldville, and I was to take my instructions from him. And the instructions were that I was to remove him physically from, in other words, assassinate Lumumba. I asked first, whose instructions are these? And he said, they've come from President Eisenhower. The president wanted this done, and I was to put together these poisons and bring them out to you. One of the poisons was a tube of toothpaste that had a poison in it, so that if he'd brushed his teeth with it, that would have been the end of the man. All of these things I put in my safe because I didn't want them lying around the office. If somebody may say, may I use your toothpaste? I felt that I had some pretty good operations going, and in the long term, my operations would achieve the objective of removing Lumumba from office, but not killing him.
The Congo plunged into utter chaos. In the confusion, two separate secession movements broke away from Lumumba's government. The country desperately needed to be brought under control.
The United States started to worry about it because the Soviets were backing Lumumba. So President Eisenhower said, well, we may have to use NATO there to keep the Soviets out. But finally, cooler heads prevailed, and they asked the UN Security Council to send a peacekeeping operation to the Congo. President Eisenhower made some very basic policies which are still in existence today. And he said that if there are troubles in Africa, we don't want to have to send troops there. Or Europeans should not send troops. It should all be done by the UN.
Lumumba thought that the arrival of the UN peacekeepers would help him bring stability. He was wrong. The UN mission provided the missing ingredient to oust his government. Lumumba had just promoted his personal secretary, Joseph Mobutu, to Army Chief of Staff. Mobutu was to coordinate with the UN troops to stop the country's descent into anarchy. Instead, he turned to Larry Devlin.
Mobutu said that the army was very unhappy with the prime minister because he was turning the army over to the Soviets. He wanted to mount a coup d'etat, but there was one condition. They had to know that they would have the support of the United States government. I had tried and failed to achieve by legal means what they wanted, the United States government wanted. So I stood up and shook his hand. Finally, it took me a while to do this, and said, I guarantee you the support of the United States government. And the coup, he said the coup will take place within a week, and it did.
UN troops were supposed to protect the independence of Congo, but they would not allow the Congolese troops, which were loyal to Lumumba, to operate. The mission of the United Nations troops was misused to topple the regime of the government of Lumumba, or at least not to protect Lumumba.
On Mobutu's orders, Patrice Lumumba was sent to his death. It was barely 6 months since Congo celebrated independence.
The number to call is 212-209-2950. An amazing suppressed story, Cuba, an African odyssey. And for those of you who pledge at the $150 level, I need 20 of you calling and pledging at the $150 level. That's $12.50 a month. We will send you this film as a thank you gift. This is an incredible deal because you go online to try to find this film. Amazon was selling new copies of this film for $496. Per DVD. Do y'all hear me with that? This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth, but just supporting WBAI, calling us at 212-209-2950 with a special arrangement we have with the filmmaker who's not even based in the U.S., based in France. We are able to send it to you at the pledge level of $150 to thank you for your support. The number again is 212-209-2950. You know, what a story. You heard the CIA guy, the station chief Larry Devlin, telling the story about how Eisenhower, sent a guy to him basically with a plan to assassinate Lumumba, you know, to put some poison in some toothpaste. And that basically didn't happen. But then with the U.S. blessing, Mobutu, who was the tool, really, of the colonial powers and of the United States, organize an illegal coup with a blessing of the CIA, with a blessing of the United States, including the arrest and later the assassination of the elected prime minister, of first prime minister 6 months after independence of the Congo, of Patrice Lumumba. Why was this so important? These African independence movements were a danger to Western control of the wealth under the ground in Africa. They had to be put down. Congo had to be used as an example. Lumumba, Patrice Lumumba, the young revolutionary talking about African unity, had to be taken out. The number to call is 212-209-2950. Why? You know, think of the minerals under the ground in the Congo. Coltan, that's needed for cell phones, that's
that's needed for airlines, that's needed for televisions, the ivory and wild rubber, the gold, the copper, the diamonds. The Congo is undoubtedly, and a writer in the New York Times said it's the richest continent in the planet, but the people are impoverished. Up to 6 million dead now in a genocide. Yes, a genocide is going on in the Congo, and it's not in the Daily News or the New York Times on a regular basis in the New York metropolitan area. In fact, nowhere in this nation is it major news. These are a bunch of black folks over in the Congo that are dying, and this whole story, in a way, began with a Belgians and their brutal colonial rule, but also when the Congolese people organized their own independence, here comes the CIA to clamp down on it, to assassinate their leader, and to put a dictator in power, Mobutu, who then was a dictator for several decades in the Congo. The number is 212-209-2950. This is Margaret Prescott asking you to support WBAI 99.5 FM. I worked really hard to get this material. This is the first time it's being offered on the WBAI airwaves. I don't know if I will be able to offer this again. If you want to go on Amazon and pay close to $4 short of $500 for it, that's up to you. But what I would suggest you do instead is to call 212-209-2950. Pledge at the $150 level. That's $12.50 per month. That's less than you spend per week, likely, on cappuccinos and cafe lattes and various drinks like that. The number is 212-209-2950. What an amazing gift to give to somebody, this story. There are many of you listening right now who heard of Patrice Lumumba. There's a whole generation, younger generation, that may know nothing about Patrice Lumumba, may know nothing about the movement for African unity, not only in Africa, but throughout the diaspora. Those of you from the Caribbean region in New York City, y'all know what I'm talking about, because people in the Caribbean, they knew who Patrice Lumumba was, and they knew what he meant, not only for African independence, but for Caribbean independence, and for freedom of Africa, and freedom of all people, and that had to be squashed. 212-209-2950. Get this amazing story. Che Guevara went to Congo because after Lumumba was assassinated, it had a huge impact in the global south. In Cuba, there were 3 days of mourning for Lumumba, and Fidel Castro decided that Cuba could not stand by and let the Congolese revolutionaries be crushed. And Che went on a 2-month tour of the continent of Africa. When he came back, he convinced Fidel that Cuba had to help in the Congo. And Che went to Congo with Cuban fighters. Cuban fighters died on Congo soil. Get the story, this hidden story, 212-209-2950. The story of a remarkable story about Cuba. Now, Che, in the end, did not succeed in the Congo because of scabs, really. I'm just going to be frank with that word, that called him out to the CIA, to the Americans. So they knew that Che was there. He had to leave. The Africans did not want Che being killed on their soil. It wasn't until decades later that Che was killed then in Bolivia, fighting in Bolivia. The number is 212-209-2950. A very, very rare film, very hard film to find. Amazon selling it for close to $500 per DVD. Your pledge level is $150. I just need 20 of you calling, pledging $12.50 per month. We send it to you as your thank you gift. I now want to go on to another clip, because Cuba not only fought in Congo, but also in
also supported the independence movement in Guinea-Bissau, one of the poorest countries on the continent, and also in Angola, which eventually helped to bring down the apartheid regime, and explains why Nelson Mandela, his first trip outside of South Africa after coming out of prison, was to go to Cuba and to thank Fidel. Let's go to that clip right now about a conference in Cuba about the young African revolutionary Amilcar Cabral and the victorious fight for independence for Guinea-Bissau.
In January of 1966, only 2 months after Che retreated from the Congo, Cuba hosted an unprecedented gathering that included virtually every armed revolutionary movement from the three poorest continents. The Tricontinental Conference reinforced the island's role as the leader of internationalism. For Fidel, this was a good opportunity to assess the qualities of the revolutionaries he wanted to support. It was undoubtedly Amilcar Cabral who stole the limelight. Cabral, only 31 years old, was leading a fierce struggle against the Portuguese Empire in one of Africa's smallest and poorest nations, Guinea-Bissau. For years, Amilcar's struggle was not of much consequence. But when the guerrillas started capturing territory, suddenly the importance of this neglected colony became evident. For Portugal, much more was at stake in Guinea-Bissau. This tiny colony could prove to be the empire's Achilles heel. The Portuguese were aware of their weakness, but they held a trump card. The government leased a strip of land on the Azores Islands to the U.S. Defense Department. That airbase was used to protect American allies in the East, like Israel and Saudi Arabia. But the lease was renewable annually, so Portugal had every intention to use the Azores airbase as a bargaining chip.
Well, under the fascist regime of Portugal, Angola, Mozambique, and Guinea-Bissau were part of Portugal. So the idea of giving up these colonies was unthinkable for that regime. So if we went to them and said, look, you must get out of Angola, we'll be very upset with you and all that, they might well have cut us out of the Azores. So NATO and the Cold War was far more important to us. There was a special law about not allowing U.S. arms given to Portugal to use them in Africa, but they did violate it, and we didn't do anything about it. In fact, we did not cut them off, even though we knew it, they were using them.
This time, the bulk of Cuban support came in the form of artillery experts, doctors, and technicians. Soldiers would go only if requested. The war escalated, and the Portuguese sent 22,000 more soldiers. Amilcar's demoralization tactics had worked. The Portuguese felt trapped. Veteran captains from the colonial army in Guinea-Bissau decided to take the initiative in their own hands. It was they who overthrew the dictatorship, creating the Carnation Revolution in Portugal. And within months, the Portuguese colonial empire crumbled like a house of cards.
In every this liberation movement, there was no military victory. Never. And they did not destroy the colonial machine, but they created, even vis-a-vis Algeria and the France for that matter, they created such a situation that before getting victory, they obliged, they forced the enemy to retreat, to come to some compromise. Usually it's in the form, it's compromise. In the essence, it's the victory of the liberation forces. That's exactly happened in each and every country.
The Portuguese army left Guinea-Bissau in October 1974. But the man who pushed the empire over the brink was not there to witness the fruits of his struggle. Amilcar Cabral was killed a year earlier by members of the Portuguese secret police. The who's who of revolutionaries gathered at Amilcar's tomb. Beside Fidel Castro stood Agostinho Neto, the leader of Angola's liberation movement. Cuba had for years been supporting Neto's movement But the scale of Fidel Castro's military involvement in Angola after the collapse of the Portuguese Empire would soon change the face of the continent.
The number to call is 212-209-2950. An amazing, amazing film, a story, Cuba, an African odyssey. That is your thank you gift for those of you who pledge at the $150 level to try to purchase this new online. Amazon selling it for $496. I tried to buy it, but honestly, I couldn't. It took weeks of work trying to track down the filmmaker, Jihan El Tari, to be able to offer you this thank you gift of this very suppressed story, the story of the liberation movements in Africa and Cuba's role in supporting them. You just heard the story of Amilcar Cabral. He was just in his 30s. He was eventually killed by the Portuguese. You know, Portugal, of course, one of the earliest colonial powers in Africa, very much involved in the slave trade. They were in Guinea-Bissau, they were in Mozambique, they were in Angola, and we'll hear more about Angola very shortly. But I need more of you calling us now before the top of the hour at 212-209-2950. Pledge your support for 99.5 FM WBAI in New York. It is WBAI New York that will bring you this gift as a thank you gift. I don't think Fox News will even bother playing this, or CNN, in fact, or even any of the NPR stations. So please call us now, 212-209-2950. Amilcar Cabral, you know, after Che left the Congo and Lumumba was assassinated, the African freedom fighters did not give up. In Cuba, hosted a conference of revolutionaries from all of the continents, and it was there that Amilcar Cabral stole the limelight. Amilcar Cabral of Guinea-Bissau, he was only 31 years old, but he was fighting in Guinea-Bissau for the independence, the liberation of Guinea-Bissau, and started to be successful, started to take over territory. And you know what? There was a relationship between Amilcar Cabral's and the revolutionaries in Guinea-Bissau's fight on the ground for independence that also brought down the dictatorship within Portugal, because the veteran captains who were fighting on the ground in Guinea-Bissau, they're the ones that really went after the dictatorship in Portugal, and the Carnation Revolution happened in Portugal. And within months, the Portuguese Empire, as you heard in the film, crumbled like a house of cards. This is after 500 years of being a major colonial power. This was the strength and the impact of African revolutionaries. It's a suppressed story because it's a lot easier for in the United States to think of Africa as just victims, and not the fact that there were revolutionaries there then and there are revolutionaries there now. And the multinational corporations so interested in the wealth that's under the ground in Africa. The number to call is 212-209-2950. The pledge level for this remarkable, rare, hard-to-find film. If you find it at all new there, you're going to be paying a bunch of money for it. But instead, you could support WBAI, the last bastion of listener-sponsored radio there in the U.S., Pacifica Radio, last bastion of listener-sponsored radio. We're not brought to you by the military-industrial complex. And this is a suppressed story. It's a hidden story. Those of us in the Caribbean region, we know that the Haitians had a revolution. The people enslaved in Antigua, in Grenada, you know, across the Caribbean region, fought for liberation. Right now, the CARICOM countries have a lawsuit going for reparations against the colonial powers. This is a history that's very, very much alive. And Cuba, of course, a Caribbean island. We often forget that about Cuba. Cuba is so vilified here in the U.S. The number is 212-209-2950. Cuba, an African Odyssey. The filmmaker, Jihan El Tari. She was born in Beirut, Lebanon. She's an award-winning writer, director, and producer. She received her master's in political science from American University in Cairo. And she was also a news correspondent covering the Middle East with U.S. News and World Report and also Reuters. She's got a lot of experience under her belt. She's won an award for the Emmy-nominated House of Saud, and she's just a brilliant filmmaker. And I want to thank Jihan El Tari not only for making this film, which has become top of one of my favorites list, but for working with me to make it available to you, the audience, here for WBAI in the greater New York area. I want to hear from Brooklyn. I want to hear from Queens, from Staten Island, from Manhattan, from up in Harlem, from down in Soho, down there by the Brooklyn Bridge, Park Slope. Where are you? Cobble Hill. Where are you? Borum Heights. Where are you? 212-209-2950. Uptown in Harlem, the Bronx. We want to hear from you. Also, the greater New Jersey area, the greater Connecticut area. I want to hear from some graduates of Prospect Heights High School. I want to hear from some folks at over in Crown Heights and Bedford-Stuyvesant and Ocean Hill-Brownsville. Please, we need all New Yorkers pitching in and keeping WBAI strong, keeping WBAI on the air. What would New York City be without WBAI? We don't even want to know. Call us at 212-209-2950. I quickly now want to go on. You heard about Amilcar Cabral's fight for the liberation of Guinea-Bissau. He was killed, a young man in his 30s. They seem to get our leaders in the 30s. Malcolm X was assassinated at 39 years old. Martin Luther King was assassinated at 39 years old. Patrice Lumumba was 36 years old. Amilcar Cabral was in his 30s. So, you know, get them while they're young, right? Well, that is really just horrible. Let's get this information so history doesn't repeat itself. I want to go on now to another clip of a vital, vital struggle in Angola, where Cuba sent thousands of troops and fought the United States, South Africa, the colonial forces to a standstill and force them to the negotiating table and to free Nelson Mandela.
Amilcar Cabral's rebellion in Guinea-Bissau dealt a serious blow to the last colonial empire. But it was the scale of Fidel Castro's military involvement in Angola that would change the face of the continent. In 1974, the Carnation Revolution in Portugal brought down the dictatorship. Guinea-Bissau was the first colony to be granted independence, and Mozambique quickly followed. Angola was the empire's gem, from where most of the colonial wealth had come. Ending colonial rule there was not going to be simple. Agostinho Neto of the MPLA had since the early 60s firmly allied his movement with the Eastern Bloc. Like Lumumba and Amilcar, his struggle against colonialism had quickly won Cuban military support. The Angolan liberation struggle had been more complex from the start. Other than Neto's MPLA, Angola had two other rival anti-colonial movements. Holden Roberto's FNLA was based in the north of the country and received arms and training from the U.S., mainly via Mobutu in Zaire. Jonas Savimbi's UNITA was based in the south, and they too got American support, which was mainly channeled through apartheid South Africa.
Who will be the first president? There was not agreement.
The Alvor Agreement vaguely outlined the transition, but the shaky deal did not provide a solid basis to overcome the years of mutual hatred. It needed no more than a spark to revive the fighting. Each faction tried to gain control of the capital. Whoever held Luanda on the night of November 11th would be officially recognized by the outside world as the legitimate government of Angola. As the fighting intensified, the superpowers stepped in to fan the flames. This was no longer a civil war in the far corner of Africa. The crisis quickly turned into a full-blown superpower confrontation, where Angola was no more than the battlefield.
This struggle in Africa broke out after Vietnam. The United States was highly sensitive at the time to the fact that it had been driven from the field in Vietnam and that our opponents, namely Moscow, would take advantage of this period of American weakness or the perception of American weakness to secure geopolitical gains elsewhere. If the MPLA achieved power with its strong connections to the Cubans and to the Russians, you would see the first serious physical penetration of the East Bloc into African affairs. And we regarded that as a strategic threat. We provided arms and financing to hire mercenaries, provide trainers, provide weaponry to Roberto's armed elements. And through Mobutu, that equipment and funding was put before the FNLA.
Not only the Americans were keen to contain the possible Soviet influence in the region. To the south of Angola, apartheid South Africa was eyeing developments with concern.
Communism, as far as South Africa was concerned, was a real threat. A threat in the sense of dictating, taking over the whole of the country. And we couldn't have that situation here in South Africa, that they could come through and instigate and plant the ideology of Marxism here in southern Africa. And that meant we're the next target, we're the cherry on the cake.
The South African Defense Force decided to move into Angola.
That phase was the phase of guns and the money. You don't have guns and money, you don't have power. You can have dreams. You don't have, you have no guns, you have no money, no politics. Yeah.
The scheduled date for independence was approaching fast. With U.S. logistical support, the FNLA troops, accompanied by soldiers from Mobutu's regular army, advanced from the north. UNITA soldiers, along with the South African army, moved up from the south. The MPLA, despite receiving consignments of Soviet weapons, suddenly found itself at a disadvantage. This was not to be another covert operation like those Cuba had conducted in Africa throughout the 1960s. Fidel had decided to engage overtly in Angola. Cuba's elite special forces were dispatched, along with 35,000 foot soldiers, to help Neto's men. Operation Carlota guaranteed that Cuba would play a major role on the Angolan battlefield.
We were worried about Cuban involvement because at that stage the talks about limitation of strategic weapons were taking place. There was talk about Brezhnev's visit to United States, which never took place, by the way, after this episode.
My assumptions then were that the involvement of the Cubans was Russian-driven. It took me years later to reach a different conclusion, that the Cubans played to bring the Russians in support. That news reached Washington in the summer of 75, and I remember it was greeted with considerable concern. This is the first time foreign military forces had been introduced onto the continent of Africa since the colonial period back at the turn of the century. First time. We felt at that point that it was necessary to face this Cuban issue head on, square on.
Cuba is a red flag in the United States because anything that Cuba does, we hate. So when they send troops to Angola, we had no choice but to say this is the end of détente, even though the Soviets really were not responsible. To see Cubans operating anywhere outside of Cuba was something that we considered a defeat for the United States.
The number to call is 202-209-2950. This is the last call during this hour for this remarkable film, Cuba, an African Odyssey, available to those of you who call and pledge at the $150 level. We're trying to make $3,000 during this hour to help keep WBAI on the air to help pay the bills. That's $12.50 a month. Now, this film, I tried to purchase it online on Amazon, and the new DVD was $496. People, this was offered in a West Coast station, the Pacifica West Coast station on KPFA, and KPFK, it flew out the door. People were calling from different parts of the country. The word got out. People were calling from Atlanta, Georgia, to try to get their hands on this film. The actor and activist Danny Glover wanted two copies of this film set aside for him because he understands the value and how difficult it is to get their hands on this film by the brilliant filmmaker Jihan El-Tahari, born in Beirut, Lebanon, received training in Cairo at American University in Cairo. This film that won the Pan-African Film Festival Award for Best Documentary, Cuba, An African Odyssey. In that last clip, you heard about Operation Carlotta. Cuba sent thousands of fighters to Angola to fight alongside Neto, the revolutionary that was fighting for the liberation of Angola from Portugal. Portugal did not want to give up Angola because Angola was so wealthy. And then the South Africans got involved because Neto was affiliated with the Soviet bloc, and they were worried about the spread of communism. Well, the Cubans, along with the Angolan fighters with Neto, they fought the South Africans, they fought the CIA-backed troops that came out of the Congo through the dictator Mobutu to a standstill, and they forced the U.S. and the South Africans to the negotiating table. 212-209-2950. They pressed for the liberation of Nelson Mandela, and then Fidel, for 3 weeks, toured the continent and was treated as a hero because of it. 10,000 Cubans dying on African soil. 212-209-2950. Keep calling and pledging. Pledge at the $150 level. We will send you this brilliant DVD. Thank you for calling and pledging. Cuba, An African Odyssey. 212-209-2950. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. Thank you so much for supporting WBAI 99.5 FM, for calling and pledging, and keep calling. Help us to meet our goal for this hour. I'd like to thank our assistant producer, Kevin Walker, the entire team there on the ground in WBAI, and all of the Sojourner Truth interns. Thank you for calling and pledging and listening. 212-209-2950. Get them before, because I might not be able to offer this to you again. Thank you for calling and pledging.
Attention, WBAI listener sponsors. The WBAI Premium Hotline is now 347-529-6664. Once again, the number is 347-529-6664. Leave a message on the hotline, and a volunteer will address your concerns and get back to you as soon as possible. Once again, the number is 347-529-6664. Thank you once again for supporting WBAI New York Pacifica Radio.
Listeners, listen up. The Community Advisory Board, or the CAB, is a group of listeners who meet every Sunday to help WBAI. Our station needs actual work done, hands and bodies, at the WBAI office in Brooklyn, New York. Now is the time to move from listening to action. Come and do some work. We need to pack and mail premiums, call listeners to solve premium problems, complete inventorying, and send out BAI buddy packs. Commit to 12 hours a week or whatever you can. You can show up from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. WBAI's heart and soul is the listener. So bring your body, heart, and soul to 388 Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn, New York. For more information, you can send an email to volunteer@WBAI.org.
Hi, I'm Rosie Perez, and this is WBAI, listener-supported non-commercial radio in New York.
Is this where I sign up to get my medical oregano?
You don't have to sign up for medical oregano.
I don't need a medical oregano card.
The medicinal properties of oregano are well known.
I know. I heard it on WBAI.
Even so, my brother was unable to speak, could not walk. We gave him oregano.
And it cured him?
First he started to crawl.
Oh.
Then he sort of toddled.
Could he say anything?
He said da-da.
Oh.
Then mama. And then he went off to kindergarten.
And you owe it all to oregano.
No, we owe it all to WBAI.
Well, what about the oregano?
We put it on his pizza.
If you owe it all to WBAI, make sure to keep your membership current. For only $25 a year, you will enjoy all the privileges of membership, including the right to vote in WBAI's democratically run elections. And don't forget to sprinkle some oregano on your pizza.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Before you continue on with your day, I'd like to ask you to visit the website at WBAI.org and consider becoming a BAI buddy. For as little as $10 a month, you can help the station and make a recurring donation on behalf of this program. As a BAI buddy, you receive a WBAI membership card, as well as very nice discounts at area museums and various local facilities, and selected WBAI-supported events. And all donate a free CD, no charge to the station. It's a safe, secure, and easy way for you to support this commercial-free, listener-sponsored radio station, WBAI.org. Thank you for your support.
Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health, and I'm Corrine Fornari, clinical nutritionist and physician assistant. And every week, I present you with new and creative ways to help you make sense of health information and bring it home to you and your family. With years of clinical experience and research into traditional and cutting-edge technologies, I give you practical information to help you take charge of your health. Now, within that tradition, today we have a special show. I'm very pleased to be here. Today we have an extended show, and it is a fundraiser. So I'm always proud to come here before you to help you support your radio station, WBAI. It's always a pleasure. It's work, but it's a pleasure because WBAI deserves your support. If you see the work that is done over here, if you see how hard the engineers work to keep these shows going, keep it all together with that dramatic move, you know, you would be very impressed, and I am impressed. We deserve your support, and you're our only sponsor. So today, to kind of help you along, and also within the tradition of my show, help you understand health situations in their entirety, so you get life choices. Today's show is, I've brought a very special premium. The premium is Waking the Warrior Goddess by Dr. Christine Horner. Dr. Christine Horner is a board certified and nationally recognized breast reconstructive surgeon and general surgeon. She's a champion for women's health. She spearheaded the legislation in 1990 that made it mandatory that insurance companies pay for breast reconstruction following mastectomy because they weren't doing it. She is the author of the book, Waking the Warrior Goddess, Dr. Christine Horner's program to protect and fight breast cancer. And this book is a winner. It won the award for Best Book in Medicine and Nutrition and Health. It's quite a book. I was completely taken aback and impressed by this book and reading it. It is a page-turner. But something happened this week that I really wanted to focus on. Well, let me finish. Let's jump back. I had so many things today. So I brought this book. This is my premium. And I also did an hour and 15 minute long interview that is exclusive for WBAI. And that's a CD with Dr. Christine Horner, asking her questions about breast cancer prevention, about foods and what to eat, and is it really possible to prevent breast cancer? Or is that just a misnomer? And we just had literally one of the most exciting conversations that I have had in relationship to this health issue. And it's an hour and 15 minutes. So we've got the book, very unique perspective in this book, explaining issues, but also giving you directions. And as we go on, I will explain more about that. Plus, we have an exclusive interview for WBAI, and that's a CD. That's $100. The book is Waking the Warrior Goddess, Dr. Christine Horner's program to protect against and fight breast cancer. And it's a winner of the award for Best Book in Medicine, Nutrition, and Health. So someone else saw it also. What a wonderful book this is. There were some very profound revelations. Angela Jolie wrote up the fact that she had a double mastectomy. And I want to read a quote from Angela. And this was a very, well, life-changing, profound choice that she made. And let me read this to you. Once I knew that this was my reality, I decided to be proactive and to minimize the risk as much as I could, she wrote. I made decisions to have a preventive double mastectomy. I started with the breast, as my risk of breast cancer is higher than my risk of ovarian cancer, and the surgery is more complex. So the next step is an oophorectomy, removal of her ovaries. So when I heard that, I said, you know, we need information. And this is striking fear into many, many women. So I contacted Dr. Horner and did a second interview specifically on this issue, on the BRCA gene, on the risk factors in relationship to the BRCA gene, the gene which Angela Jolie has, which reduces, increases her risk and reduces her ability to fight and resist breast cancer. So we're going to go right into that, and then we're going to come back. Once you've heard Dr. Horner, you're going to want to hear the rest of this whole interview. Okay? So today and this week was really profound in the revelation that Angela Jolie had chosen to remove her breasts due to having the BRCA gene. What does that mean? What does it mean for us? How should we evaluate that? In order to help us understand, it's a very profound act and very decisive act. I asked Dr. Christine Horner, who we are going to be speaking with this whole 2 hours, so this was absolutely perfect. Dr. Christine Horner is a surgeon. She specialized for many years in breast reconstructive surgery. She also was spokesperson for the American Cancer Society. So, Dr. Horner, could you help us understand this? What is the BRCA gene and what does it mean to us?
Sure. So first of all, let's talk about genes.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So in the center of every cell is our DNA. And our DNA is composed of chromosomes. They look like X's. And on the chromosomes are smaller segments that are called genes. And the genes are things that are codes, and they give instructions for our body structure and physiology function. So a number of years ago, not that long ago, there was a big push to map out the human genome, called the Human Genome Project. So that was finally completed, and since then, researchers have really focused on looking at how everything will interact with our genes. And not all of our genes express, that's what the term we use when they're giving out the instructions that they contain. Easy way to understand that is that in every cell, except for blood cells, there's a few exceptions, you know, we have the full blueprints, we'll say, for our entire physiology and structure of our bodies. But obviously, not every cell is exactly the same. So like in the liver, only the liver genes are turned on. In the kidney, only the kidney genes are turned on. And so you can see how there's very specific ways that we have certain cells where certain genes are turned on and certain genes are turned off. So if we look at how our genes express or don't express, what we find, it's fairly complex. So we have certain situations where people are born with what we call genetic mutations, meaning that how the gene is supposed to be structured, it's not structured like that. So it's not going to give the right information, or it could be that it's not giving any information at all. Then we have, which is more often the case, is that we used to think that our DNA was a completely static molecule, that it didn't change at all, but what we have found now is that it changes all the time. And everything that we do, from the foods we eat, the supplements we take, even the thoughts that we think, will produce chemicals that will hook onto our DNA, and they will turn certain genes on and turn certain genes off. So there's a whole new realm of medicine called epigenetics. So epi meaning kind of on the top, but these are all the things that can come and influence how your genes express. So ultimately, most of the time, it doesn't even matter what genes you were born with, because you can influence how your genes operate, which ones are speaking, which ones are being silenced by the everything that you do, from foods, activities, thoughts, and so forth. So genetic expression that you're born with actually has very little influence. And in most diseases, it's considered about 5 to 7%. Like with breast cancer, the two major genes that they found associated with breast cancer, as you mentioned, are called the BRCA, or the BRCA, meaning breast cancer genes 1 and 2. If you have a malfunction, let's say, of BRCA1 gene, which is what Angelina had, then what we found is that there's a significant elevation in the risk of developing breast cancer. And the best statistics that have been collected are showing that if you have this particular genetic mutation, that your risk of developing breast cancer is about 80% by the time you turn 80. By the time you turn 80. So breast cancer is something that becomes more and more common the older you get. So that's kind of the number one risk factor, is being an older woman. So it gets more common as we get older.
Now,
so,
can we just make a comparison right here?
Sure.
What would be the risk factor for someone 80 without the BRCA gene?
Okay, so 1 and 8. What the number is 1 in 8. And over your lifetime, it's just a little, it's right around 11% of the population is at risk for breast cancer, but it's about a 1 in 8 chance of developing breast cancer.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, the interesting thing, like I said, is that there's all sorts of things that will influence our genes. So what the researchers did was they looked at, okay, right now, at this particular moment in time, we find that women will have this 80% risk by the time they reach 80. However, if they go and they do family trees and they're looking back into their genealogy, because we didn't have genetic testing back then, but they're following it because it runs their families, they found that years ago, decades ago, the incidence of breast cancer, if you had a BRCA1 gene mutation, was about half of that, about 40%.
40%.
So,
at the age of 80?
You know? It's mm-hmm. Can we think, if you have that, you are doomed, you are sentenced, there is nothing you can do. But wait a minute, why in the heck did these people long ago not have as high a risk as what we see today? Well, take a look at our diet and all the things that we talked about before, that influence the risk of breast cancer. We have thousands and thousands of studies that very specifically show all the different ways that food, supplements, lifestyle choices, nutritional, herbs and so forth, that all these things will influence our risk of developing breast cancer. And many of them show you do one thing, it cuts your risk in half. You do more than one thing, those things will multiply up together. Well, those affect the women with the BRCA1 gene mutation, too. So the more you're reducing all those various different risk factors that are known to cause breast cancer anyway, the more you're reducing them in everybody, regardless of what their genome is. Now, there's some real interesting research that shows there's some things you can do specifically that work more for people that have the BRCA1 gene mutation than normal people.
Very interesting.
This is always one of my fun. So there's a particular substance that many of us consume that if you drink 1 to 3 cups a day and you have a BRCA1 gene mutation, your risk will go down by 10%. If you drink 4 to 5 cups a day, it will go down by 25%. If you drink more than 5 cups a day, it will go down by 70%.
But who will sleep?
Oh, you're guessing what it is. Caffeinated coffee. Starbucks. So, so here's the interesting thing. Caffeinated coffee is such a wonderful, fun thing for me to talk about, because it's a brilliant example of how nothing is black and white. We'll villainize certain foods. When you look at the health benefits of drinking caffeinated coffee, we find all sorts of things, like a decreased risk of Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, and a number of different kinds of cancers, breast cancer in particular. Even in normal women without the BRCA1 gene mutation, it will decrease the risk by 40%. And at the same time, you go, but, you know, it keeps me up, it makes me jittery, it causes cortisol, it can, you know, demineralize bones. Well, yeah, you know, it can do that too. And so this is where I always tell women, you have to use your own internal healing intelligence, your own intuition to tell you what works for you and what doesn't. So we were really designed so that we had that ability to listen to our intuition. And when you get refined at it, you know, you get really good where you can look at something and instantly feel in your body how it's going to feel if you eat it, you know, or not. And so if there's certain people that can drink caffeinated coffee, it doesn't affect them at all or phase them in any way. There's other people where they drink half a cup and they're nuts. Well, if you're one of those people where you drink half a cup and you're nuts, don't drink it. You know, mm-hmm. There's really hundreds of other things, you know, that I've found to be beneficial for you to do.
How about green tea?
Green tea is excellent. It is just absolutely stellar of all the things that there's certain standout foods and supplements that have particular benefits against cancer. So those are green tea is one of them. It's known to inhibit the growth of at least 11 different kinds of cancers and fairly strong effects. So they particularly for gastrointestinal type cancers, people who drink 6 to 10 cups a day. So that's another one where the therapeutic dose is fairly high. But if you drink that much, there's a 68% reduction and esophageal, gastric, you know, colorectal type cancers. Turmeric, the Indian spice from the root looks just like a ginger root, but if you mm-hmm. cut across it, it has this bright yellow-orange color that stains everything. And that's the bright yellow-orange color in curries. But that color actually is a derivative of vitamin A called curcumin. And that particular substance is one that's known to have many of the profound anti-cancer effects to it. And it turmeric so far has been found to inhibit the growth of 17 different kinds of cancers. And if you combine turmeric and green tea they
and
have,
maybe some coffee on Sundays.
You know what? They have synergistic effects with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, green tea will enhance the anti-cancer effects of turmeric by 3 times, and turmeric enhances the anti-cancer effects of green tea by 8 times.
Mm.
So invariably, when we do research, we find that if you're combining two healthy things, that we get these synergistic effects. So it becomes incredibly simple to really dramatically lower your risk of developing breast cancer or any chronic disease by eating as many healthy foods as you can, because they have these synergistic effects which magnify the protective properties.
Can we just mention one other food?
Sure.
Flax.
Flax seeds. Yeah, flax seeds is another one. So for breast cancer, flax seeds is considered the most powerful food in lowering your risk and helping you to fight it, because it's the only known food that will interrupt every single step in what we call the estrogen pathway in the body. So estrogen is produced from the fat cells in the ovaries, gets put out into the blood, then it goes and hooks onto the estrogen receptors and the breast cells and a few other areas in the body will break up off from the estrogen receptor and go to the liver to get metabolized and then goes to the colon. But in all these different places, so it's kind of a cycle of estrogen, it will interrupt that step in some way to help which benefits us as far as our risk of developing breast cancer. And I had read lots of studies by the world's leading researcher, Lillian Thompson, who's at the University of Toronto. And early in my career, I thought, you know, when I have a breast cancer patient that comes in, I'm going to put them immediately on flax seeds. And so Lillian Thompson had found that when she gave flax seeds to patients who had been diagnosed with breast cancer before they had their tumors taken out, she found that every single woman, their tumor had reduced in size. So I started giving it to my breast cancer patients, and the first one I gave it to, her tumor shrank by 2/3 in 3 weeks.
That's amazing.
That powerful, yeah.
That's amazing. So what we're talking about is that through, and we didn't even speak about everything, but we did. There's a large talk and interview that we have following this. We spoke about sleep. So lifestyle factors, food and lifestyles, we can reduce our risk by about 70%, our breast cancer risk by about 70%.
Or more.
Or more.
You know, so I told you just with the caffeinated coffee, you can do that. So we get these synergistic, you know, effects that occur. So, you know, my theory is that if you look at the places where in the world where we have the very lowest incidences of breast cancer, so that's rural India and China. Mm-hmm. So this is a place where they are getting exercise every day, getting sunshine every day. They're living off their land. These aren't wealthy people. Wealth is something that actually isn't good for health, health and wealth. And they're living on the land. They're growing their own, you know, plants and vegetables. And they have a very tight-knit, you know, social structure and, mm-hmm. and so forth. And so these people have the very lowest incidence. They also eat a lot of curry and you know, and healthy things that have been shown to lower the risk, drink a lot of green tea.
A lot of fermented foods.
Exactly. So they do all the things right. And I say, well, if we do all the same things, our risk should be as low as what you find in those rural areas and potentially even lower because we have all this research that shows that there's certain nutritional supplements, for example, like a mushroom formula called AHCC, which is made from the little roots of the shiitake mushrooms. And, you know, other than, I mean, you can eat regular mushrooms and you've got great medicinal effects with them, but there's certain substances where if we take them as a supplement, like the AHCC, it has a more profound effect. So AHCC is something that stimulates all the cells in our immune system and makes our immune system much more effective at finding foreign invaders and cancer cells. And people who take it on a regular basis have a much lower incidence of cancers. If they get cancer, their chances of surviving are much higher and so forth. So there's several different things. Grape seed extract. We could look at CoQ10, which is a vitamin factor naturally found in the body, but resveratrol, which is a substance that's found in the grape skins of, you know, in wines mm-hmm. and various different things. But to get the medicinal effects of them, you have to take them in supplemental form. And when you do, they give you much more powerful effects. Mm-hmm. So you can do all the things that are the right things to do. And then in addition to it, you know, you can really kind of pump things up by taking some nutritional supplements. So in theory, again, I think that not only could we get our rate down as low as what it is in those areas, but maybe potentially even lower by, you know, taking certain nutritional supplements as well. And having, knowing, you know, so you have the intention. You know all the things to avoid and all the things to favor. It's not some haphazard thing.
I have one last question, and it's a hard one. When a patient comes to you or with the positive BRCA gene,
mm-hmm.
what would your recommendation be?
Well, it's very specific for the individual. So, you know, what I do for anybody, whether they're BRCA or not, but is to really talk with them about what they know that they're willing to do because let's say, and what's most important to them, and it varies per person. So let's say that you have a woman who absolutely loves her breast, does not want anything done, feels like if she has her ovaries removed, she will totally lose her femininity and would be completely devastated. The thought of developing cancers of the breast or ovary are something that don't bother her all that much, and she's willing to make all the changes she can possibly make in her diet and lifestyle, psychologically, spiritually, emotionally, everything, taking it on full force, and believes that doing things like ultrasounds of the ovaries, tests like thermography, the infrared picture of the breast that can show these early physiological changes way before you get a tumor. So is willing to do a lot of this testing. You don't want to do radiation, by the way, because they found that women who have the BRCA1 gene mutation, that their breasts are extremely sensitive to radiation. Unfortunately, those are the ones where the doctors are going, oh, we got to do mammograms starting at 16, 20 or whatever. But what the research shows is that if you have a mammogram done and you have the BRCA gene and you have a mammogram done before age 30, your risk of breast cancer can be 90% higher.
Oh
so it's
goodness.
A terrible mistake to use radiation on women with a BRCA1 gene mutation. So they need to be monitored with other things, an MRI scan, which uses magnets, it does not use radiation, thermography, which uses infrared pictures, is completely harmless. Ultrasound, and we have certain types of ultrasounds that are better than the normal B-mode ultrasound that have the ability to see through dense breast tissue, which is normal in women that are younger, 3D ultrasound specifically. So there are some monitoring devices. So if I have a woman that says that, I'm willing to make every change. I'm willing to take all this on. I am completely committed to all the aspects of my life and sees this as an opportunity to live my life, you know, in the best way that I possibly can. And I'm willing to do all of that and monitor it, and I'm not freaked out about it, then let's monitor it. If you have a woman who says, I am terrified every day of my life, I'm not going to make those changes. I have a stressed out life. I don't have time, whatever. I'm not going to make those changes. And the thought of it makes me absolutely crazy. That's a woman who needs to have surgery done, because you don't want them every single day waking up going, oh my God, do I have it or not? So there's things where you really have to look at the specific person. What are their values? What are they willing to do? What's important to them? What's their psychology? And that's a big part of how you make your decision.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
That was very informative and always a pleasure to speak with you. We're speaking with Dr. Christine Horner, and we were asking her opinion on the events of this week, the fact that Angelina Jolie chose to have a double mastectomy, and how we as patients, as people, should relate to that, even some of us carrying the BRCA gene. So thank you, Dr. Horner. I very much appreciate your time.
Oh, you're most welcome. My pleasure.
I told you, I warned you, this woman is really something. I'll tell you a little bit about her history. Dr. Christine Horner was a surgeon, general surgeon, and specializing in reconstructive breast surgery when her mother got breast cancer. At that point, she felt, and they worked with the mother, they did everything traditional, and they felt they got it. A few years later, it came back. It came back in the other breast. And again, they did everything correctly, did according to allopathic medicine, and they got it. It should have never come back. A few years later, it came back as a secondary metastasis in the leg. And the mother looked up and said, I don't really want this. I don't want to fight this fight anymore. And she lived her life, but a few months later died. And Christine Horner talks about how that totally rocked her world. What could she have done? And she knew. Very directly, she was spokesperson for the Cancer Society. She knew there was nothing to be done other than the traditional approach, medical approach. So with that in mind, she went to research and started looking up alternative approaches to preventive prevention of breast cancer, and what she found were thousands upon thousands of studies published in PubMed about herbals, about food, about lifestyle changes. We know that just exercise reduced the risk by 40%, and those who exercise, we're talking about a brisk walk during chemo, extend their life and have reduced reoccurrence. We're talking about the herbs that she spoke about and lifestyle changes right down to meditation, right down. And she said, why didn't I know this when my mother was ill? And she said she stopped her practice in the way that it existed and started studying. She said she was 12 hours a day studying PubMed and putting together the research that she regretted she did not have when her mother was ill. And she put together this book called Waking the Warrior Goddess, Harnessing the Power of Nature and Natural Medicine to Achieve Extraordinary Health. And there is a focus on breast health, but it deals with extraordinary help on all levels. And that is the premium today, but also an hour, 15-minute long interview with Christine. And as you can see, she is really something. Keeping up with her in her mind, her energy, her focus, and her positiveness in relationship to working with people, working with disease, preventing disease, and or putting disease into remission. It was an hour and 15-minute interview. The two together, the book and the interview, and this interview is exclusive for WBAI, just like the last talk she gave. The last talk was exclusive to WBAI. That's my premium. It's $100, Waking the Warrior Goddess, and the exclusive interview for $100, a very powerful gift. Actually, it is priceless in what it gives you in relationship to health, knowledge, and understanding. See, when we're making life-changing decisions, we want to have all the information. We don't want to have just a little piece of information. We want to have all the information. Just like a Dr. Brock works with holistic medicine. He's an oncologist, works specifically in breast cancer. He says that he has a 30% higher survival rate and reduced recurrence in people who work with traditional as well in his practice, as well as utilizing this multitude of holistic dietary exercise lifestyle changes. You know, it's not one or the other. You don't have to make that choice. What you do is you learn, you study, you seek, and you incorporate multiple lifestyle and life choices. But you can only do that with education. You can only do that with understanding. Because I'll tell you something, if you think your oncologist is going to share this information with you, the higher rate of survival using turmeric, how you can enhance that higher rate of survival using green tea with your turmeric, how coffee enhances your rate of survival and reduces your risk for getting breast cancer, you are in for a big surprise. As a matter of fact, many of the oncologists will say, do not take vitamins, do not take minerals, do not eat fresh vegetables or fresh fruit. I've heard that before with my patients when they walk in the door. And yet that's completely contrary to the literature and what is available in the literature. So I would like you to call 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. And seriously, avail yourself. Take advantage of this premium. It is excellent. Excellent for your health, for your sense of well-being. When you're informed, your whole sense of well-being shifts. And the pleasure of this lecture that I'm giving you, but also the pleasure of reading this book, you know, as a result of Dr. Horner's research, she's done a lot of studying and a lot of work now with Ayurveda. Ayurveda is a 3,000-year-old history of Indian medicine. And so mixed in with the case studies and with the research is Ayurveda mixed in from poems, which are just beautiful, to expressions, to ways of looking at life. And then you have the scientific studies behind it that really do support the science supports the historical medicine more and more every single day. We're finding out that the science supports the historical medicine, and it's such a pleasure to see so much more knowledge accruing. The number to call, 516-620-3602, Waking the Warrior Goddess by Dr. Christine Horner, harnessing the power of nature and natural medicines to achieve extraordinary health. And this book is your guideline. Now, there are some very important myths that we carry with us in relationship to breast cancer. One is that the causes of breast cancer are unknown. That is a myth. We do know the causes of breast cancer. When we look at traditional societies that have very, very low risk of breast cancer, then we bring those people, or those people migrate to the States, and they live a traditional American lifestyle. And then, within one generation, their risk factor equals ours. If it was genetic and they just had genetic immunity to breast cancer, their risk factor would remain the same. But no, it's what we're dealing with is the majority, 95% of breast cancers and prostate cancers. Guys, you're not out of this picture. You're right in here. And understand that what causes breast cancer and what causes prostate cancer overlap. They're both hormone-regulated cancers and colon cancer. Whenever you're dealing with breast, you also, the same factors are prostate, and very similar factors are prostate and colon. But so what we're dealing with is that these indigenous cultures don't have an innate immunity. They have what we call epigenetics, an effect of our environment on genetic expression. And that's what we've been talking about so far today. So we do understand the causes of breast cancer, and we know how to prevent it. And even in cases with women with the BRCA gene, what happens is we can reduce their risk by 70% plus. And there are some things that Dr. Horner says specifically are more preventive in women with the BRCA gene, the breast cancer mutation gene, than even in just the general public. But understand, that's less than 5% of the cancers. Although it made headlines and it created fear and apprehension in women across the country, across the world, that's less than 5% of the cancers. And there are things we can do also. So the premium is Waking the Warrior Goddess by Dr. Christine Horner, plus an exclusive interview for WBAI, a CD, an hour and 15 minutes long. You will not hear this anywhere else. This is exclusive for WBAI. And talking about risk factors and prevention, and changing the odds if you do have breast cancer, but also screening, and how some of the standard screening methods that we use today are dangerous and increase the odds of getting a more aggressive breast cancer. So this is all explained and outlined very carefully in the book, Waking the Warrior Goddess. The number to call is 516-620-3602. That's 516-620-3602. Get this book. If you know someone that's had breast cancer, get this book. It will help. Even though it's gone right now, by doing preventive measures, it will help their survival. If you know someone that family maybe has a history of breast cancer, get this book. Share it with them. Share this book with your community. Get this book. Support WBAI. Listen to the CD in your book clubs, in your groups. This book is life-changing. The information available in this book is life-changing. The number to call, 516-620-3602. And the information you hear on WBAI is life-changing. So call in, support WBAI, support the program, support this program, Take Charge of Your Health, and support yourself and your own health. Waking the Warrior Goddess by Dr. Christine Horner, harnessing the power of nature and natural medicines to achieve extraordinary health. The number to call, 516-620-3602. And with the book, you will receive an hour and 15 minute long CD of an exclusive interview that I held just for the audience of WBAI. We're going to listen to a little bit of that, but I really want to see that you're calling, that you're taking advantage of this, and more important than anything, you're supporting WBAI and supporting this program, but supporting WBAI. We deserve it. The number to call, 516-620-3602. And there are more very commonly held myths that are just burst in this book, Waking the Warrior Goddess. One.